I woke up about 5:30 Sunday morning and decided I wanted to be out on the street at least by 6.
People are cleaning up now, back on Chestnut Street.
This is WHYY community engagement editor Chris Norris. He was out Sunday to survey the damage that had happened the night before. Protests in Center City gave way to vandalism and looting Saturday night that's continued through the early part of the week.
I saw the T-Mobile store that had the glasses had been shattered and the store had been looted. Right next to it was the Singer Steak Shop, Butch Singer Steak Shop, which also had a little bit of damage to the front.
Jesus, here's the Philadelphia Runner.
The silver lining was, amidst all of that, neighbors had come out and just started to clean, wiping down the spray paint. So it was nice to see the community come together and clean that up.
This is the aftermath.
Over the past 4 days, Philadelphia has been rocked by protests that have sparked clashes with police, vandalism, and looting, prompted by the killing of an unarmed black man, George Floyd, in Minneapolis. A white police officer, Derek Chauvin, is charged with his murder. Today, 4 WHYY reporters on how the civil unrest has escalated in the city as they saw it with their own eyes. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. This is The Why. Heads up, this episode contains some language that might not be suitable for all listeners. WHYY reporter Alan Yu was out covering the first protests in Center City, Philadelphia on Saturday afternoon.
So I started in front of the art museum at 2 p.m. This was when the protest was scheduled to begin.
Black Lives Matter! Black Lives Matter! Black Lives Matter! Black Lives Matter! Black Lives Matter!
There were a lot of people there, but it was very peaceful. We were all just standing on the steps. People had, you know, many signs. There were chants. There were speeches.
Tell them you are not a threat. Show them you are not a threat. Show them you have the knowledge to advance yourself.
Most of them, the common theme I heard is that they were just tired. Like, they were just tired that they would still have to protest, especially black people being killed by police officers. I spoke to Maya Bonifacino, and her sign put it very clearly. It
says, I can't believe I'm still protesting this shit.
Can you talk about that?
I mean, I think it speaks for itself, honestly. This is crazy that we're still, after all these years, still having to fight for simple, what is the word I'm looking for? Just for simple things like traffic stops and like little violations, like our people are being murdered over, and it's always been this way.
Every time me and my friends went out, we always got followed by a cop, or we always had to take a different route somewhere because I felt like my friends' lives were in danger, so we had to just do anything we could do to get out of that situation.
I talked to Danica Locke, and she said that she has been going to Black Lives Matter protests for years.
Actually, this is my fifth year actually protesting for Black Lives Matter ever since the Trayvon Martin's cases has been coming out. I feel as though that change won't happen until we actually really continuously keep speaking. No one is trying to make a change, especially in the society that we live in now. So why don't we do it as a community? And currently we're doing that, and it's progressing.
Police! 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 Police!
After a while, the crowd started leaving the art museum, walking along the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. They headed along the parkway towards City Hall and then headed north on Broad Street. They did stop at Vine and Broad. There were Pennsylvania state troopers there with their cars forming a line, and that's when the crowd stopped. At first, people kept protesting, they kept chanting, but then at one point,
hell yeah! Hell yeah! Woo!
there was an empty car belonging to a Pennsylvania state trooper and a handful of people. This was, you know, really a very small number started wrecking the car. They smashed the windshield, they smashed the windows, they spray painted the sides and the front. Some people got on top of the car. There were other protesters trying to stop them.
Don't fight them! Don't fight them!
No!
No! No! No, don't fight them! Don't fight them!
There were two protesters who got on top of another car and shouted that we are not here to fight, we are not here to fight the police.
We are not here to fight the police! We are not here to fight the police!
Now, some other protesters continued spray painting the car, and at one point, someone tossed what looked like a signal flare inside the car. And then it started burning. At first, the police were just standing there and watching the car burn. But then later on, they moved in and tried to form a perimeter around the burning car with themselves and some police bicycles. That took a little time, but then they formed a perimeter and then they started pushing the protesters back.
Back it up! Just back it up!
And then more officers came in at this point. They started forming a wider perimeter and they started cutting off the group into sort of smaller pockets of protesters.
They try and get them through.
And then we were all penned in by these lines of officers. And these are officers that included the Pennsylvania Police Department and also Pennsylvania State Troopers. Things got more heated from there because the officers in front, I was in the front, the officers in front would start pushing, but there were officers behind us as well, so there was nowhere for us to be pushed to.
What's that forward?
Move back! Move back!
Imagine a fully packed subway car, except that the walls just keep closing in around you. That's what it felt like.
Come on, move back!
We are in between y'all! We are sandwiched! We are sandwiched!
I would love to move.
Turn around and walk the other way!
We can't!
They'll let you through!
They won't! They just push them!
And that's when it got a little bit more chaotic and people became less calm.
You back up and create space! Back up!
Eventually, though, the group did disperse and headed back down along Broad Street towards City Hall again. Then more officers came, including a armored SWAT van, where officers inside the van were spraying protesters from the inside, and that made some people very angry. People threw bottles and traffic cones at the SWAT van. Some protesters, and again, I think this is still a small number, started setting fire to two of the parked police cars, and later on, more protesters gathered around the statue of Frank Rizzo. There was a fire at the foot of the statue, and people tried to pull the statue down.
It's lit!
It's literally lit!
It's lit!
It's lit!
By around 6 p.m., it had changed drastically from the beginning. There were, at this point, two police cars burning. There was smoke billowing into the sky. I heard a series of small bangs. And later, a larger boom from the burning police cars. The vast majority of people were also just standing around and watching what was going on. It was at that point still a small group of people who were doing the burning and wrecking the police cars. But it was clear, though, that the atmosphere had changed drastically compared to what it was like earlier that afternoon in front of the museum.
By Sunday morning, Philadelphians woke up to scenes of broken glass, smashed storefronts, and wreckage along the shopping corridors of Chestnut and Walnut Streets in Center City.
Right, so Walnut Street, of course, is the busiest shopping district in all of Center City, and this became the location where so much anger and rage was directed yesterday. After what started as relatively peaceful protest at both the Art Museum and City Hall, it turned into a lot of this. Nearly every business on this block, the next block, and a few on each direction.
Later on Sunday afternoon, when people were still sweeping up the broken glass and debris, WHYY's Ximena Conde was at a rally at City Hall that drew more than 500 peaceful protesters.
No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
They were calling for Derek Chauvin to be charged with first-degree murder for the death of George Floyd. They had signs that read, "End white supremacy, we are all humans no matter the color." One black protester had a sign that asked, "Am I next?" It was more like a community meeting between speakers and attendees. You could hear the choppers overhead and, you know, the occasional police siren, but mostly it was black speakers sharing their lived experiences, you know, growing up in Philadelphia, being afraid of overzealous police officers. Speakers included local clergy like Gregory Holston, who is the pastor of Jane's United Methodist Church.
And I'm going to tell you the first step we need to take to change institutions. It's another R word. It's called reparations.
They included local activists like Melissa Robbins, who ran for city council. She's also a local organizer.
United we stand, divided we're falling, and we're falling hard. And if you see the images of television, we're falling, we're bleeding, we're dying, we feel powerless.
So the primary goal for organizers was to continue placing pressure on Minneapolis authorities and bring justice for George Floyd. They wanted that police officer who was caught on video placing his knee on Floyd's neck to be charged with first-degree murder. Right now he faces a third-degree murder charge.
Some of us know that every cop, every politician, every teacher is not good. Some of us know that there are actually people that set out each and every day to do bad things. And Derek Chauvin was one of those people. That man.
By and large, almost all the speakers and almost every attendee that I spoke with, they denounced the vandalism that had taken place the night before. But they also said that they understood where, you know, looters and rioters were coming from.
Right now, honestly and truly, like Martin Luther King said, a riot is the voice of the unheard, and that's just what it is. We wouldn't have to riot if we would have had our rights. We wouldn't have to riot if we really got justice. So honestly, I don't care about looting. I don't care about looting. Merchandise, materials can be replaced. The lives of black people cannot. The lives of anybody cannot. It can't be replaced.
Solomon Jones, who is a columnist, also addressed the crowd, and he denounced the looting and the rioting, but he also said that he understood the impulse.
I understand people being angry and burning stuff down. I understand people being angry and looting. I understand people being angry and destroying stuff, but what is your agenda? What do you want? What are your demands? Because if you don't have any demands, guess what? Power can seize nothing without a demand.
That's right. The rally ended peacefully. Most of the people just dispersed, although there was a small subset of folks who continued marching toward Love Park, presumably to go to a protest that was at police headquarters in another 30 minutes or so.
When we come back...
And then sort of before I knew it, I was face down on the steps, the stone steps, and I was being arrested by an officer.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is The Why. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. Later on Sunday, WHYY's Avi Wolfman-Arendt was with a smaller group of protesters outside Philadelphia's police headquarters.
When I got there, it was like almost a comically peaceful scene. There was maybe like a few dozen protesters milling on a patch of grass across the street from the police headquarters, and you know, birds chirping, a few sirens going off in the background. And I have to say, you know, my initial thoughts on covering this was this is kind of a dud. Like this just isn't much of a rally or a protest. It seems like either the folks who were supposed to show up didn't show up, or the people who organized it didn't have as much organizing muscle as they, you know, hoped they would. And there were far more police. There was like a huge line of police behind a barricade in front of the roundhouse. And the guy who was organizing it, who's a longtime organizer named Asa Khalif, he started off on the bullhorn kind of saying some, you know, pretty aggressive things, some, you know, lodging some verbal insults at the police who were lined up across the street.
Now, what are we talking about? Our brother George Floyd? Let's talk about our brothers right here in the city that you motherfuckers murdered.
And then the procession, which at that point was maybe around 75 protesters, it started to move, and it kind of became a pseudo-march. It was a small group of protesters moving south down 6th Street with police trailing them, like a large sort of phalanx of police in their wake. About 5 minutes into the rally, the first incident of trouble arose. And I did not see how it started because it happened on the opposite side of the crowd from me. But the police tackled, apprehended, and pepper sprayed a young man. And I later talked to some protesters who thought maybe he was doing some graffiti, like spray painting. But as soon as, you know, he was arrested rather forcefully, other protesters started gathering around him and making trouble. There was a confrontation where the protesters and the police were really screaming at each other. So after that, people in the protest kept moving down 6th Street, and police kind of just kept arresting people and pepper spraying people. I did see some water bottles being thrown, hurled from the protesters at the police. It couldn't have been more than 5 to 10, but the police were just sort of picking up their pace behind us and kind of just really ushering this march forward. And like I said, there were more police than protesters. This was not a big rally. And sort of as this group moved down 6th Street, past Market, it was kind of just splintering. It was kind of falling apart. By the time we got to around 6th and Sansom, 6th and Walnut, there really wasn't much of a protest left. I mean, as a reporter, I hung around just trying to record sound and video and tweet about the arrests that were taking place all around me. This part happened really, really fast. I was standing right in front of the Curtis Publishing Building, which is a big grand building at the corner of 6th and Walnut. And I was looking down to send out a tweet, if my memory serves me correctly. And then sort of before I knew it, I was face down on the steps, the stone steps, and I was being arrested by an officer. And I told him very clearly, I'm a member of the press, I'm with WHYY. I don't remember him saying much to me, but he just continued to arrest me, bound my hands behind my back. He put plastic cuffs around my wrists, sort of the zip tie cuffs, and then sat me down on the curb with several other protesters. Basically, what the police said is they gave a dispersal warning and that we had disobeyed the dispersal warning, all of us who were being arrested, and there was easily over a dozen. I did not hear a dispersal warning. There was a photographer from WHYY with me. She did not hear one. But obviously, it was really chaotic and loud. There were helicopters overhead, so it's hard to know exactly what was said, but we never heard it. So they put plastic cuffs on me. They sat me down on the curb. An officer came by with a sort of a body cam-looking camera and sarcastically told us all to smile. I think I want to add here that there was definitely verbal abuse going back and forth, but I've covered some protests before, and I've never seen officers get aggressive like this. You know, typically, I've seen them show a lot of restraint in protest situations, and there was this girl on the ground crying, just crying her eyes out, and the protesters were mostly young and mostly white, and she had been pepper sprayed, and an officer stood over her and said, "This is how you learn," screamed it at her. So anyways, we're sitting on the curb with plastic ties, and then we're sort of loaded one by one into the back of a police van. There was eight of us crammed into the back of this little van. It was dark, and it was super, super hot. I was sweating through my shirt. But the van ride itself was kind of interesting because I was in there with the seven other protesters, and I identified myself as a reporter and said, hey, I might as well continue to report while I'm in here. You know, I didn't have my recording equipment with me at that point. It had been confiscated. But, you know, it was interesting just to talk with everyone. I will say that the composition of the folks in my van, it was me and seven others. Of the seven protesters, six were white and younger, I would say 35 and under. And there was one gentleman who was older, said he was 55. He was a black man. And he just kept interjecting and saying, like, the fact that there are all these white people at these protests is the reason the police are so scared. He kept saying, that's their worst fear. That's their worst fear. And he was referring to the fact, I think, that he felt white and black people were unifying together over this cause. When we got to the station, there were a bunch of police officers waiting at desks, sort of just waiting to take down our information and process us. And then I was released, had to sign my little citation, and then they gave me my stuff back and walked me right out of the station. And then I went over to finally sort of formally interview a few of the folks I had been sort of detained with.
I don't know if you feel comfortable sharing this again, but one thing you mentioned in the van was that you felt like because it was a smaller protest, it was a chance for them to flex their muscle because, you know, there wasn't a big crowd that could fight back. Did you?
Manageable.
Yeah.
It was a manageable protest. We were, unlike yesterday, we were greatly outnumbered.
They felt like the police saw this little isolated protest. There were almost no media there besides me. And so the officers, in their opinion, took an opportunity to scare some young kids and rough them up and maybe, you know, sweep them off the streets before dark when, you know, things were going to get worse. I mean, they saw it as sort of an opportunistic lunge by the police who had been taking, you know, a bunch of abuse from larger crowds over the course of the weekend to that point and were angry and wanted to take it out on someone. They saw this as revenge.
A spokesman for the Philadelphia Police Department said it has launched an internal affairs investigation into why Avi was arrested, despite identifying himself as a member of the press.
Flames leapt from the roof and smoke poured from this row of businesses on the 3000 block of Kensington Avenue.
Over in West Philadelphia, people all around were grabbing anything they could get their hands on to throw at law enforcement vehicles, eventually setting multiple police cars on fire.
Here you can see right outside of City Hall, several Humvees, National Guardsmen with their long guns out this morning, standing patrol at some of these landmarks here, including the Rizzo statue.
WHYY's Miles Bryan was out with protesters Monday when a confrontation between police and protesters escalated even further.
I went out to cover a protest on Monday that started in front of the police headquarters in Center City, Philly, when I got there at 3, when it was starting, there was maybe a few hundred people, but that quickly grew into over 1,000. People were peaceful, they were fired up, but they were peaceful. And it's worth saying that, you know, it was very well organized. You know, we started marching after, I don't know, 30 minutes outside of police HQ. And organizers really had the reins. There was one point where police detained someone who didn't look like they were with the protest, who maybe was holding a couch leg. And the crowd swarmed up to engage with the police, but organizers were able to stop people from engaging, to stop a confrontation. Instead, had someone who had a sign that said "legal observer" come and take the police officer's badge number. So it was very, you know, it was very on the rails, at least for the first hour and a half or so. Around 4:30 or 5 p.m., we had marched down to near the planetarium on Ben Franklin Parkway. And I was, you know, a little bit far back from the very front, but suddenly people just started swarming onto the Vine Street Expressway right near 22nd Street. I don't know what the original impetus was. I was, you know, a couple dozen yards back, but just suddenly everyone was hopping the fence or pushing these metal sort of swinging barricades up that allowed you to just go through the fence, and suddenly we were on the highway, first blocking the westbound lanes and then blocking both sides of the highway. And that was the moment, I mean, that was the moment that things felt like they had taken a turn into the unknown, the unplanned for. I mean, we were blocking cars that were just driving and stopped. You heard tons of honking. People were screaming. And we were out there for maybe 5 minutes, although I don't know, I have a good sense of time, but it wasn't very long when suddenly I started to hear loud pops. And those pops, we know now, were tear gas. And I wasn't at the front, I wasn't right up next to the police force, so I didn't see exactly what happened. But I gotta tell you, from the middle, there was this sudden surge of people who were pointing towards Center City, who suddenly started screaming and yelling and running back at me, back down the highway, trying to get off. And it was really scary. It was one of the scariest things, frankly, I've ever experienced, because at that moment, I thought that cars were coming down and were starting to hit people, like a stampede to get out of the way of traffic. But pretty quickly, you know, I started to taste the tear gas, and you can actually see it in the air. But at that point, it was just this crazy scramble to get up the grassy hills, the grassy embankments off the highway to some kind of safety. I mean, people were screaming, were pulling each other up. People were leaving behind bicycles and backpacks. People were stuck because they couldn't get back over the fence or couldn't figure out how to get over it because it was so crazy. I mean, I saw people crying. I saw one young woman just saying, "I'm so scared, I'm so scared, I'm so scared." I just turned and grabbed on my equipment and ran up the grassy embankment. And I was kind of a blur, but I believe I was in an area where I could just run straight up and that there wasn't a fence or it was easy to get through or around. And then all this is happening with the sound, the constant whirring of 3 or 4 police helicopters overhead. And at a couple different points, the helicopters actually turned on their sirens. I didn't even know police helicopters had sirens. So they're sort of sirens in the sky. It's hard to hear. It was chaotic and scary. After this sort of chaotic moment of tension boiling over, what I thought was going to happen, which was, you know, an even sort of worse culmination of arrests and of engagement between police and protesters, didn't happen. Police sort of held their line, and protesters held their line. And after some period of time, maybe an hour on Ben Franklin Parkway, people started marching again back downtown. Like I said, I was not up at the very front, so there are things I couldn't see. That said, I didn't see any protesters or people involved in the march being anything but peaceful. The city of Philadelphia, the chief of police, Daniel Outlaw, and Mayor Jim Kenney put out a statement at like 11:15 p.m. last night that spoke to their reasoning. And They said that tear gas was used after police forces were pelted with rocks and bottles, and one state trooper's car was rocked back and forth by protesters, and that trooper, you know, had no means of escape. I can't say for sure whether that did or didn't happen because I didn't see it with my own eyes. I can tell you that the protesters I spoke with immediately after, and the sort of feeling in the air was, why did this just happen? There's been a number of videos posted on social media of black-clad police, you know, firing tear gas at people who are clearly trying to escape, and not only trying to escape, but getting stuck and getting trapped on these grassy embankments, trapped by the fence, trying to get out of the way of the gas. So I think it does raise some questions. I can't say for sure that the official statement is exactly what happened, and I think there's further reporting to be done there.
In a press conference today, Police Commissioner Danielle Outlaw said the officer in charge elected to use tear gas because there was no other effective option, and that there will be an internal investigation into the matter. WHYY's community engagement editor Chris Norris has been watching everything unfold. He's covered Black Lives Matter protests for years and sees a bigger evolution happening. Chris, this protest started off in kind of a familiar place on Saturday, pretty peaceful, not a lot of clashes. The kinds of protests that Philadelphia has become known for in recent years, it escalated into something we haven't really seen here. What do you think was different this time?
Well, I think it's true, and you know, and it is different. It doesn't just feel different. It is different. It is because it's coming at a time that there's so much other things that people are dealing with, including the coronavirus, which is disproportionately killing Black and Brown folks, historic unemployment rates, disinvestment in communities and schools, hyper gentrification, and people feel desperate. And some of that is manifesting itself in rioting and looting. And it is remnant of the long, hot summer of 1967, which also started in June and which saw American cities, just like we're seeing now, burning and looting and pillaging.
What do you think happens now? I mean, obviously, we're very much still in the midst of this. We're talking on Tuesday in the middle of the day. We don't quite know what's going to happen tonight, but do you have any expectations about the rest of the week?
I do, and unfortunately, it's not optimistic. What's going to mitigate this moment is not reforms, it's not prayer, it's not fasting. It's actual a re-examination and a restructuring of society that acknowledges white racism, white indifference, and white privilege and the impacts that it has on Black rage. We're looking at the long, hot summer. You know, if you think about this moment in the context of the long, hot summer of 1967, history is repeating itself. And the causes of what we're seeing in some of these cities and the anger behind what we're seeing, even if these rioters and these looters are not connected to any mainstream organization, the anger and the rage and the indifference to society is indicative of how they feel left out, how they feel disenfranchised, how they don't feel connected to their community. So you always hear, why are people burning down their own community? Well, community is an interesting word, and community doesn't mean neighborhood. So people are burning down their own neighborhoods, but they're not necessarily burning down their community because they don't feel connected to a community.
Chris, thank you for speaking with me, and stay safe and stay well.
Thank you for having me.
Reporting in this episode by WHYY's Alan Yu, Ximena Conde, Avi Wolfman-Aaron, Miles Bryan, and Chris Norris. The Y is produced by Annette John Hall, Alex Stern, and Kelsey Hansen, all of whom had a hand in putting together today's episode. Thanks, team. We had editorial direction from Katie Colinari. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. Stay safe, and we'll see you Thursday.